Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving-Schenck, a.k.a. Moo of Moon, Moo, and You. Our guest today is Mary McManus, a.k.a. Graceful Lady. She describes herself as a post-polio survivor, as a finisher of the Boston Marathon this year, and as a customized poet who creates poems specially for you. This is One Upbeat Woman, everyone, and I think this is going to be a wonderful, wonderful show. The call-in number tonight is 347-205-9200. Before we bring Mary on the show, please welcome Joan Adams, a.k.a. Moonvine. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Kate.
How are you?
I'm great. Excited about this show. I think it's going to be very, very good.
I do, too. I do, too. Let me just bring Mary on. Hello, Mary.
Hello. How are you?
Great.
Hello,
how are
Mary.
You?
I am doing just fantastic, and it is such a joy to be with both of you tonight.
Oh,
well, we are
delighted.
Very happy. Yes, we are delighted. Absolutely. We are very interested in your story, Mary.
Well, it's been an incredible journey, to say the least. And, of course, it's continuing. Every day is full of surprises, and I never know what to expect, which is really awesome. The journey begins, really, when I was 5 years old, and I contracted paralytic polio. Now, some of the people who may be listening who are young may not even know about that disease, except FDR, of course, one of our beloved presidents, had it and was in a wheelchair. But polio in the, gosh, I guess I don't even know when it began, but I was in one of the last polio epidemics in the United States in the summer of 1959. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, I do.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Very well.
Very well.
Okay. So what happened was I was in my kindergarten year. It was the end of my kindergarten year, and I was dancing around the gym like any normal five-year-old would do, and I dropped with paralytic polio. And the doctor came to the house, and they did a spinal tap, and I was paralyzed on my left side. Now, I was one of the very lucky ones because many, many people who experienced polio, many died in the epidemic. Some ended up in what's called an iron lung to help them breathe because it can affect the breathing muscles. So the fact that I was able to stay at home and was only paralyzed on one side, I truly was one of the fortunate ones. And so I went through intensive physical therapy. And I was able to regain the ability to walk, although I needed a leg brace for a couple of years. And I walked with a limp. My left leg was shorter than my right. It still is, but not by much. But I'll get to that later. But what happened was I had hated and rejected my body. It was the subject of a lot of teasing by the kids. And so what I did was I decided that I was going to do what I did best, which was buckle down and just become the best student I could become. And so I did that. I hated gym days. I did find, though, through the grace of God, the ability to stand there and in gym class and, you know, be called easy out and go through all of the taunting and the teasing about my body. But I had this very sacred space that I always kept inside of me and always felt God's presence. God came to me in a vision when I was paralyzed, which was pretty amazing.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And invited me into a well bucket. And even though I was paralyzed, I was able to step into the well bucket. It was this amazing vision. And I just knew I was going to be okay in my life no matter what happened.
And how old were you?
I was 5.
When you had the vision?
Yeah.
Wow.
What did God look like to you?
Well, have you read Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh?
Yes.
You know that picture of him on the back jacket?
Yeah.
That's what God looked like to me at the age of 5.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and it was just a head. It was just a head with this long white beard and long flowing white hair.
Mm-hmm.
There was no body.
Wow. Fascinating.
Cool.
Yeah,
so go
it
ahead,
was.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So I went through my life, and I limped through life, literally and metaphorically, although I was valedictorian of my high school class, and I went on to Boston University. I got a bachelor's in public relations, and I worked at the counseling center. I was doing public relations, and the director of the counseling center said, "You have a real gift. I love the way you talk with the students. You should go into counseling." So I got a master's in social work. I was in the Jesuit Honor Society and went on to have an award-winning career at the Department of Veterans Affairs working with our nation's veterans. And about 1996, I started feeling crummy. I was tired. I didn't have a lot of energy. I would feel weak at times. I just didn't feel quite right. And I started talking to my doctor about this. And in the back of my mind, I had known about post-polio syndrome because I had some reconstructive leg surgery done. And ironically enough, my orthopedic surgeon was caring for the wife of one of my patients. And when I was at one of my post-op visits, he told me that he needed my help as a social worker. Because she had post-polio syndrome, he needed to operate on her, but I had to help her find a way to take care of her husband while she was recuperating. So I knew that post-polio existed, although my primary care physician didn't believe it existed and just told me to do more exercises. So finally in December of 2006, I could barely get up my stairs. I was having trouble swallowing, breathing. I had tremors. I was just getting weaker and weaker and weaker. I was scared out of my mind, not knowing what was happening to my body. I was starting to see different specialists, but everybody was compartmentalizing what was wrong with me. And the overarching theme was that I was neurotic. I needed antidepressant medication. I needed to get into, psychiatric counseling. Now, all of that may have been true, but the bottom line was that what I was dealing with was post-polio syndrome. And so in October of 2006, when I felt as though I really didn't care whether or not I woke up the next morning because my life was just so intolerable, I was so uncomfortable in my body, and I felt God speak to me, and God told me to Google post-polio syndrome, which I did. And I discovered that a half an hour from my house was the International Rehab Center for Post-Polio at Spalding Rehab.
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
Amazing.
Right in my backyard, practically.
Yeah.
So I called up, and, of course, the first phone call was 45 minutes of just sobbing of, you know, this is what I've been through. And the woman, her name's Anna Rubin, she does the education and outreach for post-polio. She just was so loving and such an angel. She sent me a book called Post-Polio Syndrome, and they scheduled me for my appointment. And it just, that's where the whole healing journey really started. The therapist at Spalding Rehab had so much compassion and so much love and help, and through their eyes, through seeing that they could love me in this state. And of course, I, at that point, I'd never worked through what happened to me with polio. I just had sort of kept everything festering, and, you know, it was like an abscess on my soul that then came out in my body in the form of post-polio syndrome. And so I went through intensive outpatient rehab, and they were telling me, you know, you really shouldn't continue to work full-time. It's countering the effects of the rehab. And I thought, what am I going to do? I mean, all I've known is being a social worker. And I did have a hobby, though, that I never thought about, which was creating customized poems for all occasions. And everyone had told me that I should work for Hallmark. And
oh.
I sort of dismissed it and said, oh, okay. Well, in February of 2007, because my body was shut down, I had to get still and I had to look inward and I had to start connecting with my spirit. And I also had to start connecting with my center, and I started loving myself. And through this, in February of 2007, poetry started pouring out of me. And the first poem that I wrote was called Running the Race.
Mm.
And it was all about my polio experiences. And one of the lines in the poem is, while in my mind's eye, I visualize winning a 10K race. Now, I was in a brace. I was using a wheelchair at times. I used a cane for mobility. I had a wrist splint. I no more was entertaining the idea of running a race than mm-hmm. going to the moon at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something in my unconscious that was coming forth. And so I started writing the inspirational poetry and realized I was writing a book. And my husband came to me one morning as I said, you know, I've got to make plans for leaving the VA. And he said, I know what you're going to do. You're going to start your own greeting card company. So I said, oh, okay. You know, sure.
I love it.
And so I went on Vistaprint, which does business cards and all these wonderful things, and I designed my business card. And I started thinking about seriously leaving the VA, and that I could see that I had another life, a new path, that I was being called to a new path, and that was the gift of post-polio, but had no idea what was about to unfold. And so I was going through intensive outpatient rehab. I started feeling much better just through the hands-on, through the mind-body connection, doing meditation, doing deep breathing, talking with all of my therapists who were just amazing, and making plans to leave the VA. So I was starting to cut back on the work, and relieving that stress, I think, also helped my body to respond to the rehab.
I'm sure.
And yeah. On May 25th of 2007, that was my last day at the VA. And 5 days after that, I got a publishing contract for my book of inspirational poetry.
Goodness gracious.
And I slowly was doing my home rehab, and I was slowly beginning to feel a little bit better compared to where I was, of course. And in October of 2007, I have a dear friend. Her name's Janine Hightower, and she does in-home personal training. And I was still having trouble getting off a low toilet seat and just feeling strong. And I asked her if she thought we could build on my rehab program and maybe do a little bit more. And she said, "Well, we'll see what this body can do." And I started strength training for the first time in my life, and started very slowly building on the rehab. And then in February of 2008, she said, well, you can get off a low toilet seat now. I said, yeah, I can, and I'm feeling better. And still dealing with fatigue and, you know, some of the other symptoms that go along with post-polio, but doing, you know, light years ahead of when I first started rehab. And she said, well, what's your next goal? And I said, well, you know, I've never been able to really walk outside, and I'd love to be able to feel free enough to go for a walk. And she said, okay. And then we came up with some other goals. I want to diversify my program. And then what fell out of my mouth next did not go through my brain. It came from my spirit. And I said, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon for Spalding Rehab Hospital.
And she dropped her teeth.
And she said, well, you know, you got to get running shoes because those polio shoes are not going to work.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I went to Marathon Sports, which is an incredible store here in Brookline. It's like 2 minutes from where I live. And I went there, and I met another angel, actually two angels. The whole Marathon Sports family was incredible through this whole journey. And I went in, and I said, I need a pair of running shoes. And Spencer said to me, oh, well, what are you in now? And I said, I'm in these. And he said, oh, so what have you been wearing for running in the past? And I said, I've never run. So he took all this time finding the perfect pair of running shoes. They put in orthotics in it. They put in a little heel thing to make it as comfortable as possible. And off I went. And then when my husband and daughter heard that I was doing this crazy thing, they wanted to be a part of it. And on April 20th, the three of us crossed the finish line of the 113th Boston Marathon, and we raised $10,535 for Spalding.
Amazing.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Amazing story.
Thank you.
That is fabulous.
Oh, my. It's so moving.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Of course, there's 100 things I want to ask you real quick. But
yeah.
The connection of a five-year-old to spirit, God, whatever word you want to use there, has always fascinated me. The children arrive connected, and there you are having a vision at 5 years old. That's just fascinating to me. And you understood what you were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
And the well bucket is just a wonderful concept that you had received at that time. That is just so cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the water. And I, you know, I was born into a Jewish family. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know about Jesus and the well bucket and all of that. But when I got to Sunday school, I was in Hebrew school, and I actually got tossed because I kept asking when we were going to learn about Jesus.
Oh, I can see that might be disturbing, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. That was my image.
And the other thing I love is that you, as you were writing, and I think this is true whether you're doing poetry or writing a book or writing journals, whatever you're doing, if you're writing just straight from your heart to the paper, there's that vision of running the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it wasn't something that you sat down and thought, oh, this is something I'd like to do. But the minute it was on the paper, it became real.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It did. It did.
That's powerful. It's absolutely wonderful.
How did it feel running the Boston Marathon? How did your body respond?
Well, I'll tell you. We had trained long and hard. And through the whole journey, I was preparing myself, mind, body, and spirit, through poetry. And on my website, I have all the poems that I wrote. And I journaled, and I blogged, And it wasn't just getting the body ready, it was getting the mind and the spirit ready.
Oh, yeah.
And it transformed the body. I transcended the body because it was just amazing. I mean, with post-polio, there's cold intolerance. And this New England winter was one of the harshest ever. And with the grace of God and with prayer and with great clothing from Marathon Sports, God bless them, they helped to outfit me to get me as warm as possible. But it was brutal. But I would visualize warm lava going through my body.
Mm.
And I would just put myself into these trance states where I could transcend the physical pain. So when we got on the marathon, go ahead, what?
I'm surprised you didn't cry most of the way. It was just the pure joy of being able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
I mean, there were tears and tears and tears, buckets of tears during training runs, during the marathon. There are pictures at the finish line where, and even before the finish line, where we're in the final 3 or 4 miles, where I just had bouts of just absolute sobbing. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's what I would imagine. To me, I think if it were me, that's where I'd be. I just think it would be so overwhelming.
Yes.
After a lifetime of battling polio to be running a marathon.
Yeah.
That's just huge.
Well, your family must be very proud of you.
Oh, they are. And I'm so proud of them because, you know, I have twins, and my son didn't run, but he was our support team back here at home. He would do laundry. He would get groceries because on the weekends we were useless with our long training runs. And I couldn't have done it without all the support and all the love. And then we had so many people who were praying for us. And I really felt those prayers on Marathon Monday. I just felt so surrounded. Mm-hmm. And I work with an energy healer. And she also was incredible. And she waited out at the base of Heartbreak Hill, which is after 20 miles. You get into hills. So the last, after you've already done 20 miles, you've now got to face these hills, and it's called Heartbreak Hill. And she sat at the base with a sign waiting for us. And then our trainer, Janine, met us at the top of Heartbreak Hill and ran to the finish line. So, you know, when you talk about the power of support and prayer, I am absolute living living testament of how that power, how you can feel that, and it can help you really get beyond anything physical.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, you
absolutely
really have a story that people need to hear.
Have you written for readers? Have you written it in book form or magazine form or anything?
Well, First Magazine for Women interviewed me, and they're going to be, hopefully the editor will approve it, the writer loved it, for their September issue. There's a documentary that is going to be coming out later this summer. I have all from last April. I started, well, actually before last April, but I do have sort of the book manuscript, very rough draft form, from last April.
Oh, good.
To now.
Good.
So that's going to be my next project.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
After my second book of poetry.
People need to hear this.
Well, that's why it's so great to be on your show. Thank you.
I just think it's wonderful.
Yes.
And, you know, nobody can say, I can't.
No,
mm-hmm.
They can't.
Mm-hmm.
And we all need to hear that.
We do. We really do. And, you know, I tell people, look, you may not run a marathon. That was just my symbol. You know, that's what I was called to do. But whatever you're facing in life, whatever the challenge is, there are always, always ways to climb that mountain and to overcome whatever is facing you. I mean, I had no idea how I was going to survive physically, spiritually, financially when all this hit. And it was just like I felt my life came to a screeching halt. And God didn't leave me very long in that really pitch black state. The light started coming in very quickly once I stopped fighting it. And I just completely surrendered to what was happening to me. And it was through that surrendering that the light came in. And I just said, God, please help me. And now it's, you know, every morning I start with my meditation. I do my affirmations. I do my gratitudes. I do my intentions. And I spend a lot of my day, I'm still writing poetry and inspirational poetry as well as the customized poetry. And I spend a lot of my day making sure that I'm staying connected, because when I don't, like that, my body will tell me, you're out of balance, and then I need to figure out what I need to do to get back in.
So it's all a matter of staying connected to spirit, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because, mm-hmm. yeah, just because I think this is probably true of everybody.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yes. And just as an example, last week I started going at warp speed, doing, you know, going from morning to very late at night, working on a political sort of agenda, and I got really sick, and I even ended up in the hospital with having to get rehydrated. And, you know, it's a small thing for me. I'm not, you know, I'm healthy. I bounce back, et cetera, et cetera. But it was such a great lesson in balance and taking the time to say no and to
mm-hmm.
preserve my own strength and not just run around eating bad food, drinking gallons of coffee, and
mm-hmm.
talking to people all day long, and it just was so depleting. So
mm-hmm.
I knew it, but I couldn't do much about it, except I could have. And actually, I just got sick so that I could kind of shut it all out and start again. You know, start again. It's what everything is an opportunity to begin once again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We need that quiet time in the morning to feed our souls, too. And that's the first thing to go if I get in a hurry. And I know better.
Yes.
I know better.
Yes.
But
mm-hmm.
that early morning hour is so vital.
Oh, it is. It's even, I think it's important to get up a few hours earlier than, say, the rest of the family
mm-hmm.
to do those very crucial things to restore yourself for the day.
It's amazing
yeah.
what taking that time will do. It is absolutely amazing. And if for any reason I don't start my day that way, then I notice such a difference. I notice that I run out of steam a lot sooner. And as a polio survivor, I learned how to drive myself, and this was something that was great for the marathon, because as a polio survivor, I always learned how to drive myself beyond what I was capable of.
Yeah.
And in the marathon setting, perfect. In life, sometimes not so good, but you know, I know that when I run out of steam, I have to stop and take a power nap or do whatever I need to do. I'm exquisitely sensitive to taking care of myself. And, you know, people talk about, well, isn't that selfish? Well, I read a quote from Abraham Hicks. Do you know them?
Yes.
Yes.
And I get their daily inspirations. And one said, if we were all selfish, the world would be an incredible place, because nobody would be, there wouldn't be the competition, there wouldn't be the jealousy, there wouldn't be the envy. If we were just all taking care of ourselves and fueling ourselves and filling ourselves up with love and joy and gratitude, then it would spill out into the world.
Yeah.
I believe that. Yeah.
Well,
and that's hard to hold on to. That's not the way we were raised.
Yeah. And it's a different definition of selfishness, too.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like a whole new world view of what selfish is.
Well, we've forgotten, or we never did even learn how important it was to love ourselves first. And
yeah.
We have to.
And that's what the selfishness is. It's self-love.
Yeah.
And then when we feel that self-love, then I can set the world on fire. I can serve others. I have so much to give because I filled myself up and I'm taking care of myself.
Yes. There's always the old metaphor of the people on airplanes telling you to get your own oxygen first so that you can help other people. That's a perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we hear it all the time, or maybe we don't, but still, that is a great story as to why we should do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think it's hard
to
do, especially for women who are taking care of a family. I think that
just
goes against our need to take care of everybody else first, and we have to. I do. I have to just say, "Whoa," you know. I have to have some time for me. First, and then I'll deal.
You also work as a nurse, right?
Kate does.
I do, yes.
Oh, Kate does. I'm sorry. Okay.
No problems, yeah.
Wow.
And which is a triple codependency on top of everything else. Yeah.
I didn't know you could have triple codependency. Wow, yes. I guess I did when I worked as a social worker. That's great. That's great.
Well, you know, social work is a very difficult profession.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys see, or you saw the worst of the worst, you know, and I know that I would see burnout. When you see burnout in any of these professions, that's uglier than anything. And there's such burnout in that profession, and it's hard to guard yourself against it if you are surrounded by people who are getting discouraged by and not really wanting to help anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are crying for help, and everybody's too burnt out to help them. That is the worst tragic thing I could think of.
Well, I'm so grateful that there's a lot of young blood in the VA system now. When I left, I said, you know, I'm praying for you all, and you need to pick up the work now. I was so blessed because a wonderful young lady took my job when I left, and that was a big relief. That was a huge relief.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't matter, but it just, you know what I mean? I mean, I had to leave no matter what, but I was
just
so grateful. That I know there's somebody there who's taking care of the patients that I left behind. And it was hard.
Oh.
It was so hard.
Oh, I bet they loved you.
Yeah. And you know what the beauty is? This is the coolest part. This is the absolute coolest part. Many of the patients stayed in touch with me, and one in particular had passed. He was very sick with brain cancer, and it was a blessing. And I wrote a poem to as a tribute to him. And so I read it at his funeral. And one of the people who was there said, "You do this?" And I said, "Yeah, it's my gift. And I'm so excited that, you know, I have this gift and that..." I mean, they put it in the Blinded Veterans Association bulletin. It was wonderful, and everybody felt that I had really captured his spirit. And also, it was a wonderful way to say goodbye and help his transition and help the family. So this gentleman said, "Well, you know, we've got this 40th anniversary of the Blind Rehab Center at West Haven, and I'd love to commission you to write a poem." I said, "Oh, cool." So I wrote the poem. I sent it to him. He calls me, and he says, "Oh, you have to come to the celebration to read it." I said, "What?" He said, "Oh, yeah. He said, you and your husband have to come. You're still part of the VA family. And I love working with the blinded veterans. And that's a whole other story for another day with politics taking the program away. But everything happens for a reason, and I know that. But the coolest thing is that I am going to the West Haven VA, and I'm going to read my poem at the celebration. I'm going to see staff people that I haven't seen in a while. There are going to be some of my patients. My favorite patients are going. And it's so cool that this new life, there was all this feeling of ending, and even though I knew a whole new world was opening for me, but the fact that I get to go back and I get to just celebrate the 40th anniversary and all the work that the VA does, and I can do it in a way that is not only preserving, but just makes me feel so great. And this poem, it just was such a joy to write. It's all about it's in his voice and his gratitude, because for 53 years he's been losing his sight to retinitis pigmentosa. And the blind center, he keeps going back and he gets new technology and they help him with his mobility skills. So they've been helping him and millions of others. They're also treating the returning Iraqi veterans who have the visual impairment and the brain injury. So it's a way to celebrate healing and seeing it on that side. So it's really cool.
And it's such a nice blend of both worlds.
Yes.
The poem becomes the connector. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you mind reading the poem to us? Or at least another poem that you might have close by.
Yeah, you know what? Oh, I didn't bring up that poem. It's on my website.
Okay.
But why don't I read the first poem that I wrote?
Okay.
The Running the Race poem?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, let me grab, I have that one right here. I actually, my cordless phone sometimes gets static, so I'm actually upstairs away from the computer. But that poem, it's under thank yous on my website. But this is called Running the Race, and I wrote it in February of 2007.
Okay.
Early summer 1959, my kindergarten year, everyone around me filled with nervous fear. Despite the sock vaccine, hope polio would disappear. The poliovirus crept right up and knocked me in the rear. Dancing all around the gym, feeling free just like a bird, I dropped to the ground just like a stone, and no one said a word. The pain, it was so searing, the diagnosis even worse. It's polio, the doctor said. He was abrupt and terse. Called one of the lucky ones, I had a mild case, but with the other athletes, I could never keep their pace. Miss Holly, physical therapist, curly hair and a warm, broad smile. It tempered the pain of being apart. To walk, I'd take a while. I always wore those special shoes the kids they poked and teased. With no support and much abuse, with childhood I wasn't pleased. But put nose to the grindstone and learned all that I could. I couldn't kick a ball, but my grades were always good. Years went by and no more thought to polio did I give. I accepted the limp and everything else and decided my life I would live. But symptoms of weakness and muscle pain did grow. I kept a stoic face, hoping no one else would know. Life no longer was my own. I struggled through each day, suffered in silence, isolated from friends, trying to keep depression at bay. And with the grace of glorious God, my world had opened wide. I discovered there was a post-polio team, and they were on my side. Using wheelchair to travel set limits on what I could do, resulted in joy to realize I could live life anew. Celebrated my body, creaks, groans, and need for a brace, while in my mind I focused on winning a 10K race. Sought out paths for healing, and my spirit flew free. For the first time in life, I could truly be me. The chains are gone and possibilities abound. I'm a tree with my roots planted firmly in ground. I'm now off the sidelines, no need to sit and whine. So much gratitude fills my heart, and love and beauty shine. After all these years, I can join the loving human race. I exceed all expectations, and now I set the pace.
Wow.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Your entire story is such an inspiration, just beginning to end. And the poem tells it all.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
right
there. Yeah,
it does. Mm-hmm. So do you write every day like that, the poems? Do they just flow?
It depends.
Or, yeah.
What's that?
Do they just pour out of you every day?
I just finished my second book, which is called Set Sail for a New World, Healing a Life Through the Gift of Poetry. We're getting that ready for publication. And then it depends on what I'm dealing with on any particular day as to what comes out. I blog, and sometimes as I'm writing the blog, a poem will just start percolating and will flow out of me. And so I keep the poetic reflections, it's now called Poetry in Motion, on the Road to the Boston Marathon on my website, up to date with those poems. And then, for my customers, I do their customized poems for birthdays or Father's Day was so much fun. I just did this really cool card for a little girl, one of my customers' grandchildren, and she loves Tinkerbell, so I found a picture of Tinkerbell for her to color and put that on the front of the card and then did a poem all about, I weaved in the theme of Tinkerbell. Our friend Trapper Sherwood?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, one of his best buddies just got married, so he's telling me that he and his best friend are Red Sox fans, and I said, Trapper, are you asking me to incorporate baseball with wedding? And
he said yes.
He said yes, and so it's under samples on my website. It was so much fun to write, because what I did was, I incorporated the fact that they saw Big Pappy hit a walk-off home run at the Red Sox game. I incorporated that into wishing them well.
Yes, yes.
All right, so that is how that works. I loved the slideshow, the happy birthday card on the slideshow on your website. Tell me how you do, what do you do exactly?
Say
somebody contacts you and do they send you pictures?
Oh, actually, that I collaborated with from Twitter. Actually, we were friends before Twitter, at Mama Cool Dog, Cool Dog Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And last Christmas, she had a customer, Sharon Riley did, who wanted a poem to go with the e-card. With the slideshow. So we did that, and then we also did the birthday card. And so what happens is, people send in their photos to her, and we collaborate, and we get the timing and the music and everything, and that's how we create the slideshow with the poem, and and it becomes a beautiful keepsake.
So if somebody wants you to write a poem, they pretty much just write you a note and tell you the story.
Exactly. Exactly. And
I need a poem that does this. This is my friend who loves golf and has a birthday or whatever, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And you would tell me about, you know, what's special about your relationship, how long have you known each other, what sentiments would you like to convey on their, you know, on their birthday. I just sit down and weave it into a poem. It's truly a gift from God. It is truly, truly, truly a gift, because it's just amazing how I'm able to do this and how much joy it brings me, how much joy it brings others, and how when I do it, do you know when I sit and write poetry, every ache and pain in my body dissolves.
Right. Right.
Because you're
say,
lifted up on a more spiritual plane, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's a real creative endeavor, and you are living in the moment. There is all this flow that's going on, and I notice the same thing about writing. I can, it's so, it takes you to a whole new vibrational field, higher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I tell everybody, you know, don't wait till you are diagnosed with cancer. Don't wait until you have a life crisis. These are things you can do right now. Find what brings you joy. What takes you to another dimension? How do you lose yourself? How do you make your heart sing? Find it, do it, live it, be it, breathe it. And, you know, don't wait. And actually, let me see if I can find that poem in my book about there's a poem that flowed out of me about, you know, don't wait to let yourself. Oh, let me see if this is. Yep, it's called A Date with Destiny. And this is from New World Greetings, Inspirational Poetry and Musings for a New World. I got to turn on the light. The sun's going down. Did you have another question while I go do that?
No, but we need to say your website is www.newworldgreetings.com.
Yes.
Newworldgreetings.com.
A Date with Destiny. Don't wait till you die to let your soul fly free. Please listen and hear what happened to me. My body was broken every imaginable place, yet to the world, always a smile on my face. My soul trapped inside, feeling it was broken too. God brought me out of darkness, my light I shine on you. She showed me a way through people I met. It took a while, a message hard to get. The kingdom of heaven is right inside me. Take the leap of faith, fulfill destiny. While I did my soul work and let it fly free, my body transformed. Changes did I see. My head now aligned, the tremor no more, the strength in my limbs, a stabilized core. When once had detached from my heart and my soul, they all work together amazingly whole. The rules that I live by are only my own. To find strength and courage, my, how I've grown. I followed my heart to create my bliss and spread God's word, no greater joy than this. Take the leap of faith, into grace I can fall, but I'm floating on air, answering God's call. Don't wait till you die to let your soul fly free. There's no reason to live a life in misery. Follow your passions, and I'll tell you this, the body falls away healed when you follow your bliss.
Ooh.
That's great.
Yeah, that's super.
Thank you.
That is incredible, really.
These just poured out of me.
Yeah, well, I was going to say it is most definitely a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You couldn't sit down and determine to write that.
Is it more or less automatic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I mean, this book, and I do want to let everyone know that I donate 20% of the proceeds to Spalding Rehab's International Rehab Center for Polio to fund much-needed research so we can get some more understanding of this whole post-polio syndrome. I mean, certainly, you know, we become vulnerable because of our type A's and everything that we've done, but there's so much research that needs to be done understanding the neurology of it and, you know, what we can do to make sure that we all have the best possible quality of life that we can. So I donate 20% of the proceeds. It's so important to give back. But this book, I mean, I didn't know I was writing a book until I'd say I started in February. Actually, after about a month, I said, oh, my God, this is a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started forming chapters.
Mm.
And it was, and then I just said, well, I've got to get this published. And then all the doors started opening.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of the essence? Is there it sounds like I don't know if you've heard of channeling. you know, I'm sure you have. Mm-hmm. In fact, Esther Hicks's channels Abraham, which is a group of entities. But I'm just wondering if you feel like there's some sort of, not an entity, but a spiritual presence that you actually have communicated with, who you know, who is helping these words flow to you.
You know, my hair is standing on end as you said that, because when I went to the Newburyport Literary Festival to find out how I could get my book published, mm-hmm. and I told a New York Times bestselling author what was happening to me, he said, ooh, he said, somebody's passed on and they're just getting this to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd forgotten about that until you just mentioned it. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
And I do understand that. I believe that. I entirely believe that. Someone is sending you. I have a friend who composes music in the middle of the night. And he says, you know, I don't compose music. It comes to me.
Mm,
and it's
right.
The same thing. It, you know, this is not something I am doing. I am receiving.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I felt as though I was taking dictation.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly the experience when I write poetry. It just feels as though it's dictation.
I wrote a poem many years ago and never did do anything with it because I never could determine that it was mine. It's like, well, surely I read this before. You know, I never could take enough ownership to do anything with it. I read it at church and that kind of thing, but I never could have the nerve to send it off to a publisher because I kept saying, but what if it belongs to somebody else? And I couldn't find it anywhere. But it never did seem to belong to me.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, in light of everything you know now, I think it must be clear that there certainly is something else at play with all creativity, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I believe that.
Yeah. Anything that anybody writes, you know, there's something else going on there.
Well, I think it was, a prolific songwriter. She wrote Diane Warren. She writes, yes, Diane, is that her name? I think it's Diane Warren. Anyway, she was on Oprah, and she was talking about the creative process, and she believes that she just pulls it from the divine mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a matter, though, of sitting. And there is a discipline to that. The discipline of sitting every morning and sitting, as I say, sitting in the silence, but sitting and doing those things you're talking about, the gratitude list and the, you know, the opening your heart and the journaling and all of the things that you do that keep you with that connection so that you can receive.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just, I mean, you know, most people cannot do it because they don't have that discipline to listen, to hear, to receive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a
think about it this way: your body, you know, halted your ability to keep moving.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That's exactly what happened. My body shut down so that I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And
now you can do it, and you know, because you have sort of trained yourself to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And there, you know, one of the hallmarks of post-polio, ironically enough, is fatigue. And so I have to, you know, make sure that throughout the day that I have times of being still. So it's so funny, you know, how that works. And I know that, you know, when I start my day, I have to start it slowly. And, I mean, what I'm doing, though, and it's funny, I was talking with some of the therapists from Spalding the other day, And they were saying, you know, what you do is what every human being should be doing to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I when I eat, oh, it's so much better now. I don't choke anymore. But I still have to make sure that I eat slowly. I have to make sure I eat mindfully, because otherwise it'll go down the wrong way. And I have to concentrate on keeping these muscles really strong and intensely visualizing them being strong. And it's something, you know, we should all sit and relax and enjoy our food and eat slowly and cut it into small bites. And, I mean, these are all things that came out of, you know, my body going haywire. And yet the lessons that I'm learning, I want to share with everybody, because if you do it, you'll feel so much better.
Yes, yes.
And again, that's a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter-in-law does it. Excellent job with that. She was healed of serious digestive issues, but the eating slowly and all of those things that she learned at a workshop, and it takes it very, very seriously. She doesn't
mm-hmm.
grab something and run.
Mhm. It's amazing. It is
and once
absolutely
again,
amazing.
With her, with Monica, it all came from the lessons that she learned through an illness.
That's right.
The lessons and the blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
And
quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And, you know, so many people, I mean, I had to work through, you know, when I see people, you know, well, the greatest part of this whole journey was, you know, dealing with the fact that everyone would pass me when I do road races or whatever. And I had to learn to celebrate the fact that I'm out there and I'm running with my heart and my soul, and none of that matters. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's peeling back all the layers of what is really important and uncovering that beautiful essence of the flower. And I discovered how to fall in love with myself despite, you know, running crooked, having a crooked head, having tremors, and I visualize myself. I mean, in my mind's eye, I am absolute perfection. We all are.
Right.
And if people can look at me and say, wow, she feels she's perfect, and I'm perfect in my flaws, my imperfections, I'm divine. How can I be anything else? But, I mean, I'm 55. It took me a long time to learn this. And if I can help to instill it in others, or just open the door a little bit, then that's my purpose. And I'm so delighted I can do that.
Oh, yes. And that is your gift at this point, too. Not only the poetry, but being able to share what you've learned.
Yes.
Is a gift.
Yeah.
And you express yourself so beautifully. Not
yes,
only in poetry, but in speaking, yes.
Yes, you do, and your voice is very upbeat. There's assured about what you're saying. You know, you're not at all depressive. You know what I mean? It's not you are just totally upbeat, and it's really great to hear it in your voice. And it's very, very contagious.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, most definitely.
And, you know, this is the irony in all of this, is that when I was contagious, when I was infectious, nobody wanted to be near me. I mean, not even my own mother. She was so scared. She was paralyzed.
Aww.
She was immobilized. And, you know, it's a story for another day. But what's important is that God came to me. And you know, I believe that I just opened up to that, and it was just such a blessing, because I did have my granddad and my father did take care of me, but she was terrified. And it wasn't only her. I mean, you remember the polio epidemic, the fear ran rampant, and so I was infectious. Well, now I am infectious and contagious in this wonderful new way. And it's so cool.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
Well, you won't believe it, but we have about 25 seconds to the show.
Oh, my goodness.
Remaining on the program. And obviously, we have so much more to talk about. We would just love to have you come back. You are just an amazing person. This is so much fun. This show will go out on iTunes, and we blog about it and put it on a podcast and so forth. So I will put that up on Twitter, and we can just pass those links around, and it would be great to have you come back.
Just let me know when.
Oh, that'd
love
be
to,
wonderful.
Love
that's...
to hear your poetry. Oh, my gosh, that's so mm-hmm. much fun.
Thank you, ladies, so
thank
much.
You.
This
oh,
is just
you.
Amazing. I can't believe the hour's up. My gosh, that was
it is.
Incredible.
We're going to change the name of the show to The Fastest Hour of the Week. I just think we have to. It just goes every week. It's just, you turn around and it's gone. I've loved every minute. Thanks a million.
Yes. Thank you all. Thank you, Mary, so much. And
thank
Joan,
you
thank
so
you.
Much.
And I also want to thank Klaus Jensen and Henrique Burke Abu, who have allowed us to use their music on this show. And thank you again. Thank you, everybody. I'm just going to play this music.
Thank you.